Welcome to Follow the Sound. I am your host, Brian Kroc. Each week, we explore different aspects of the world of music, including album reviews, concert reviews, and This Week in Music History, which is what we are bringing to you today. And we have ourselves, I think, a pretty good week. It is it's a fairly condensed week. You know, just not a whole ton of things happened. But it'll be a very entertaining show, I know that. Along with me to help me out with the show right now is Jacob Crum.
Howdy ho.
And that's it. Greg will be here later, but it'll be just fine. He's running a little late right now. Yes, we are looking forward to this episode, and Jake and I can carry this. We got this. We don't need Greg. He's great to have around. Extra power that we get, but Jake and I can handle this. It's what we're good at. So, if you want to help out the show, please go to our website at followthesoundpodcast.com and click on the Amazon banner in the right-hand corner. If you click on that banner, it'll take you to Amazon, and you can do all of your normal shopping, and it won't cost you anything extra, and we get a little bit of money from everything that you purchase. A little percentage of everything that you purchase we get as sort of like a finder's fee kind of deal. So go to the website, click on the Amazon banner, or you can just go to followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon. Once again, also want to thank lineupmedia.fm for allowing us to do the show. Go to lineupmedia.fm and find plenty of podcasts to listen to, you know, of course, after you listen to ours. But you can find tons of different content, different types of shows and different genres and all of that to whatever you could possibly want. So go check them out, lineupmedia.fm. All right, this week in music history, we are doing February 26th through March 2nd. Although, that's kind of a lie because we're not doing the 26th. The first one, we're doing the 25th because I specifically requested this one thing. And that is, anybody who knows me knows that I bounce around in genres that I like. And occasionally I do get on like a folk kick. But in February 25th is the anniversary of one of my all-time favorite albums. And it's from an artist known as Nick Drake. And he released on the 25th Pink Moon, which is his best album, also his last album, because a little bit after that he died. Some will say that he committed suicide, but those in his family suggest that he didn't, that he it was sort of an accidental overdose of prescribed drugs. But either way, it was a very sad thing. But I just wanted to play you the song from Nick Drake, which is the title track of the album. And it is the one that hooked me, and I still listen to this song. I still listen to this album whenever it hits me when I'm driving in my car. And it goes a little something like this.
I saw it written and I saw it say, Pink Moon is on its way. None of you stand so tall. Pink Moon, gonna get you on the Pink Moon.
So there you go. That is Pink Moon by Nick Drake, the title track of the album. The album was released in 1972 under the Island label, actually. If you didn't know that one, Jake, that was back when Island basically signed everybody and, you know, didn't really have like a whole lot of super hits at the time. So the great thing, though, about this is that Pink Moon was released and not necessarily the great thing, but it was released and it didn't exactly do well. But the fans that were there that really liked it kept getting the album, and fans of Nick Drake kept growing and growing and growing even after his death. It has been used in numerous movies. It has been used in a bunch of different commercials, including that's how I found out about it, was because of a Volkswagen commercial that used the song Pink Moon. And it's such a great song, and it's such a great album, showcasing sort of his spiral into depression, which he battled for most of his life. But it's a sad thing, but also a very, very good album. So I just wanted to throw that one out there.
Have you ever heard the conspiracy that Tom Waits is Nick Drake?
No, but that sounds crazy.
It doesn't it?
Because they're nowhere near the same voice.
No, they look pretty similar, though.
I guess.
And they were both signed to Island Records, and Closing Time came out like 2 months before Nick Drake died.
Oh, yeah.
So
there you go. Pink Moon by Nick Drake, February 25th, 1972. One of my all-time favorites. So now let's actually get into the week that we have this week, starting with February 26th.
Yeah, so 1965, Jimmy Page, that Jimmy Page, the same, the one and the same Jimmy
yes.
Page, releases his first and only single, She Satisfies. Now, he's released other albums, but the only proper single he ever released was this right here.
That was interesting.
Yeah,
that's not what I expected.
No, not at all. But I want to know who he ripped off on that one.
Well, I mean, it sounds like a few other rock songs.
I know.
Which is, it's kind of funny, but later on, the What It Sounded Like to Me, the first song that stuck in my head was actually an Aerosmith song. Which
really?
Just means that Aerosmith used a similar thing later on. I believe it's called Shut Up and Dance.
Mm-hmm.
That it goes da 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 da.
Yeah, yeah.
They played at the end of Wayne's World 2, mm-hmm. if you're wondering.
Yeah. Yeah, very similar chord progression, very similar structure. Might be in the same key. I don't know right now.
Yeah, I don't.
The
I
guitar
don't fully remember
on this
either.
Reminds me a lot of All Day and All the Night.
Yeah, yeah. Who is that? The Kinks?
Yeah, the Kinks. It's very Kinksy. The B-side on this was called Keep Moving, and I misspoke earlier. I think I said this song was called She Satisfies. It's She Just Satisfies.
Oh. Now, wait, is that a statement of...
the limitations of her satisfaction?
Yeah, the limitations. Or like, she just satisfies, you mm-hmm. know, it's satisfactory.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it
a description of his expectations?
Yeah, as in, she just satisfies.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, she just satisfies me.
I don't know.
You know? Like, I get that. Like, she doesn't need to be satisfied. She just satisfies. Like, okay, yeah. It could be one of those. I don't entirely know. But, you know, let's go ahead and
we
move
are reading
on.
Too much into this.
Let's see. In 1990, Cornell Gunter, a former lead tenor of the Fabulous Coasters, is murdered in Las Vegas, Nevada at the age of 53. Gunter, who was in the midst of making a comeback, was shot in his car by an unknown assassin. Some have suggested that his murder might be linked to Cornell's plans at having a press conference to publicly come out as gay. But I can't say for certain that this is anything more than a wild speculation. I can't say, however, that Mr. Gunter was a fantastic singer and also a member of the Flares and a founding member of the Platters before they had a record contract or a name. The Platters were, of course, a vocal group that recorded some of the very early rock and roll from an era when vocal groups would team up with bands.
Yes.
So, yeah. I like that, though. I don't like the fact that he died, obviously.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's one of these guys that you may not know about in history who impacted stuff that would come. And I mean, it's possible. It's possible that he was killed for wanting to come out as gay. So
But
at the same time, I mean, this was 1990. So, I mean, it's not like it would have been that horrible. I mean, it's not like this was the 60s, you know.
Yeah,
or the
50s. I mean, you could see some kind of wild nut job in Las Vegas
who just found out he was gay and then was like, you know,
yeah. This like crazed Platters fan that I don't know, but everyone I've seen that claims that never list any source, and they're just like, you know, I talked to this investigator and this is what he told me. So I mean, completely unfounded, or
yes,
I can't, what's the word I'm looking for, verify.
Yeah,
any,
no,
unfounded.
Unfounded is, yeah, is a good word. So yeah, let's go ahead and move on.
Move on to an even sadder story.
Yeah,
because in 2003, on February 26th, America's last Pfeiffer passed to the great beyond. Othar Turner was born in Madison County, Mississippi, in 1907. At age 16, he began making fifes out of river cane. What you're hearing right here is a fife and a snare drum.
Yeah.
That's it.
Sounds good to me.
All right. At age 16, he began making fifes out of river cane. Othar spent the first half of his life doing whatever he could to get by, that being a farmer, a mechanic, any job he could get, and spending every night he could in his spare time with his friends and family. Othar's music is what he learned from his grandfather, and it's called American Fife and Drum, sometimes American Fife and Drum Blues.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know what that genre is, that's because it's in the process of dying right now. There's not a whole lot of fifers left around.
No, there are not.
Personally, I think that American Fife and Blues sounds like something between gospel and blues with sort of like African rhythms thrown on top.
Yeah.
Polyrhythms. And the fact that it's done on just bass drums and snares makes it sound like a march, but it's not a march structured beat. It's not a march rhythm.
No.
So I didn't know anything about this until I read this story, and I think it's outstanding, and here's another clip from Othar that gets more bluesy, and I really dig this.
Yeah, and this one's a live clip, too.
Yeah, pretty groovy.
I see what you mean by if, like blues, you know, because it has a blues sort of substructure to it.
Yeah,
despite the fact that the drums and stuff aren't what you would call like a typical blues beat. It's not even a country shuffle, which is what kind of would fall into that line. But yeah, no, that's like just a straightforward march beat, but with blues over the top. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and his singing, we didn't get any of his voice in there, but his singing, he has a very gospel sort of style.
Here,
of singing.
He's singing right now. Let's play.
You know, it's got that gospel structure of like the same line three times over and then a refrain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With these kind of swells and what's the word I'm looking for?
Crescendo?
Yeah. There you go. So anyway, Ortho's group caught the attention of Mississippi music professors in the 60s, and they began to make field recordings of whatever barn he was playing in at the time, or literal field, because when you don't have...
That's called musicology, if you didn't know. Yeah. Another branch of that is ethnomusicology, which is where they go into remote parts of the world to research their music. But musicology has always been a good thing in America because of the vast groups of people that sort of separated themselves from the rest of the world, developed these musical things, and then when they were rediscovered again, then everyone's just like, oh my, it's like, this is amazing. And they're like, how long has this been going on? They're like, generations. It's like, we've been living on this hill for the last 150 years. Like, it's exactly what my mind went to was, you know, was this is an art form in America that isn't typical.
Yeah.
So I like that.
Yeah, and I think it kind of gives you an idea of what really early jazz would have sounded like, because this is exactly like a fife and a snare drum is what armies marched to.
Yeah.
Which is what jazz came out of, was the, you know, the army bands. Anyhow, Ortho's group, however, they started playing sometime in the 70s. They were billed as the Gravel Springs Fife and Drum Band, and in 1982 they appeared on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. However, Ortho died in Gravel Springs at age 95, the same day as his daughter Bernice, who was in hospice care.
Mm.
4 days later, a joint funeral service was held with a full procession that took them through Gravel Springs to Cistern Hill Cemetery. At the head was the fife band and his 13-year-old granddaughter, Shardy, playing the last fife Ortho made.
Nice. That's great. That is a great piece of American history. I love it. That you win the award for today.
Thanks. When I read that about his funeral, I got a little choked up.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, I kind of feel bad moving on.
I know.
Because like I feel like I should sit here and explore this a little more, but we're just gonna have to do it off air because the birthday that we got coming up next.
Yes.
Is another man who is exceptionally influential in music history and, you know, recently passed away. And that was in 1928, born in New Orleans, Louisiana, was none other than the one and only Fats Domino. And of course, we talked about Fats Domino all the time on this show because we are weirdly enough, like, big fans of his. Like, and I think it's because of the show. I think it's because we kept talking about him. It was just like, it's Fats Domino. You know,
it began with me not being able to, like, not knowing the difference between Fats Domino and Chubby Checker music.
That's, yes.
And then over the course of a year, finding out that Chubby Checker is an homage to Fats Domino.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But it's still amazing to me that he lasted as long as he did. You know, making music, still playing like well into old age, just like Chuck did here in St. Louis, but he did it down in New Orleans. So happy birthday, Fats Domino. But we got another one right after, not too much further down the line. In 1932, we have the one and only Johnny Cash, who is born J.R. Cash in Kingsland, Arkansas. In 1950, when young J.R. joined the U.S. Air Force, he was not permitted to use his initials as a first name, and so he chose John. We won't attempt to eulogize J.R. here. We've already done that on the show.
And better people than us.
And other people have done it way better than us, and he also did it himself. So, let's see, there's been three autobiographies published about him in 1975, 1986, and 1997, but, you know, it's Johnny Cash. I mean, what else can we really say about him?
Well, I mean, I do want to talk briefly about what to me, was a lesser known work of his. Like, everyone knows about the prison albums.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Right. Folsom Prison and
San Quentin,
yeah.
And then Tennessee Prison, right?
Yes.
Which was recorded originally as a TV special, and I did not know that, in 1974. The album wasn't put out till 2003.
Yeah.
But there is a DVD you can find.
Okay.
And also, here's another one. In the 70s, I didn't know this, he went to Sweden and played in some Swedish prison.
Interesting.
And released an album there. I don't know if it ever had, I don't think at the time it had an official U.S. release.
Mm.
And even now, the CDs that are out might have even been printed in Europe and then shipped over, but I'm not sure.
Interesting.
Because that's a hard one to find.
I can imagine. If somebody has that album on our Facebook group, please let us know.
I found an entry at Discogs. That suggests it might have been released in the U.S. under San Quentin 2, as opposed to like Ostrakon or whatever the heck the Swedish prison was called.
Yeah, that'd be so great though. It was like, especially if the prison had some like really like Swedish name.
Yeah.
You know?
Because like when I think of Folsom Prison Blues, the first thing that pops in my head is not the songs that were played or the concert itself, but just the things that were the noises in the background.
Yeah.
Like there's a guy that gets a call for a visitation, and like right after the end of a song, there's a voiceover that comes on in the PA that's, Sandoval, your party is in reception. And that just always pops in my head every time I think of that album.
Yeah. So, happy birthday, Fats Domino and Johnny Cash.
And
we've got another one.
One
now.
More.
Go for it.
1953, Michael Bolton is born. Michael Bolton in New Haven, Connecticut.
It's Michael Bolton.
It's Michael Bolton.
I mean, I don't really know what else to say about Michael Bolton. It's like, I'm sorry. I know there are some people out there who like to, crap on Michael Bolton. But that dude has an incredible voice, and he's been popular for a long time now, and so people should just deal with it.
I still have yet to watch his Christmas special.
Oh, yeah?
And everyone keeps telling me I should, because it's like...
I just thought it was hilarious that he did that, what was it, like Lonely Islands, like Captain Jack Sparrow, like tribute or whatever that he did. That cracked me up. So, but yeah, look at that. I mean, we've got birthdays right there for like three insanely popular people, and I'm happy with that.
February.
In vastly different genres.
Yes.
So you got, one in like early rock and roll, with more of the R&B kind of side of it. Boogie Woogie on the piano, like one solid country in the rebel country phase. It's like, and then Michael Bolton, who is one of the greatest ballad singers of all time. So,
You know what? Johnny Cash, Michael Bolton, both have put out gospel albums.
That is true.
Don't think Fats Domino ever
did. I'm not sure. He might have.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
If it's out there, I should probably find it. It's probably
a Fats Domino gospel album.
Yeah.
Yes. But let's move on to February 27th. What do you got for us, Jake?
Going back a little ways, 1675, England has its first English opera performed at the Dorset Garden Theatre in London. It was written by Matthew Locke and performed by the Duke Company. It is called Psyche.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know anything about it.
All right. Well, a short 30 years later, we talked about it last week, the Pope bans opera.
Yes.
And England didn't give a damn because they were no longer Catholic.
Yeah. The Church of England. So, they've always been that kind of weird, though. You know, they're just like, screw you. We'll do our own thing.
We're across the pond. We're on the other side of the channel.
Yeah, but I honestly didn't know anything about this as far as like an opera or any of this type of stuff. You know, it's 1675. It's, a small piece of British history. And so it's like, I don't know.
Well, okay, but I should
it
say.
It still cracks me up, though, because I remember when I was walking near the Royal Albert Hall, And we were just walking down the street from there, and I came across a pub, and the pub is like, you know, pub. It's like such and such pub, mm-hmm. founded. It's like 1682. And I'm just like, this is strange. It's like I'm weirdly looking at a building and a bar that has been in existence longer than my country.
Yeah.
So there, that's...
I mean, also worth of note, though, is that nowadays, operas in anything but Italian are insanely unpopular.
That's not entirely true.
Okay.
The last, like, super popular... Mm-hmm. I mean, because, I believe Hamilton is listed as an opera.
Well, okay.
And Rent was totally an opera. Rent was all singing all the time. There was no talking whatsoever throughout the entire movie. Opera. So it's a modern opera, but it's still an opera. So.
Yeah, but nobody going there was going to opera. They were going to Rent.
That's true, but still.
I mean, I'll agree with you that artistically it's an opera. But.
Yeah, but then the movie came out and they didn't do that.
Yes.
They stylized it in a film that's a musical. So, but yeah, they didn't do the whole,
But I'm saying you look at the big names in opera that people know today, Pavarotti.
Mm-hmm.
Pavarotti sang in more or less only Italian.
Yes.
A little Latin. Maybe, you know, there's a French opera here or there, but.
Yeah.
That's about it. Even when they do opera in Japan, they sing just the Italian ones. They don't sing the English ones. They don't sing the German operas.
That makes sense.
Most of the German opera composers composed in Italian.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know. That's always been weird to me.
Because I remember that from Amadeus, because Mozart was like, please let me do an opera in German.
Yes, yes.
So
strange to me.
Well, I mean, like, of course, all the classic operas are that way, because, I mean, that's just where they came out of and... You know, it was what was popular and all of that, but...
Well, let me rephrase why it's strange. The fact that an art form has survived since 1675, almost 400 years.
Yeah.
And has never been colloquialized is strange to me.
Mm.
Right? Like when you look at people doing mime, you don't go, oh, that looks French. You know what I'm saying?
No, most of the time it looks like weird people in church to me doing mime. Because if you haven't noticed that the only place where mime is like an actual art form are in churches now. It's like, I swear. It's like I've never seen a mime out in public.
I don't know.
I was in Paris. Didn't see one mime. I was sorely disappointed. I wanted to see one like in the park or something like that. Nope, no mimes. The only place I see mimes are performing weird living music videos or whatever they call them in church. I don't...
Human video.
Human video, thank you. That's what that is.
Which I've never been a fan of as an art form.
I've never liked it either.
At least mime, there's an illusion. Like there's, you know, to there being something else. Human video, it's just a bunch of people that can't do mime.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this rabbit hole is deep enough.
I would like to point out, Dallas Hamston, if you're listening, I am not crapping on the art that you studied as a youth. I appreciated what you did, bud. He might actually be listening. I'm just going to let you know that right now. All right, let's go ahead and move on. What do we got next? Oh, mine, 1984. It's short and simple. The Jacksons do the Pepsi commercial, which premieres on MTV.
Damn.
That's it. That's all it is. Sales of Pepsi shot through the roof after that. I bet you didn't know that.
I did. Also, I went back and watched it.
Yeah.
And it's just a Michael Jackson song with the lyrics changed.
Oh, yeah?
You know, Pepsi's the new generation. They were doing that back in 84.
Wow. See, now I remember when they did the one that came later.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was a big to-do. Like
the one where you burn his head?
It was one of the ones that I think it was done for like the Super Bowl or something like that. Like, yeah, that one was pretty crazy. But
if you, I
almost wonder if this was the start though of Pepsi doing that, because now they do that consistently where they bring on an artist and have them do their commercial and sing a particular song and, you know, whatever it happens to be. Cause I remember when Britney Spears did it, and then recently they had a different girl doing it. You know, but yeah, it's, I mean, I'm sure they tried to get Justin Timberlake to do it. So
Do you remember like 6 months ago when we talked about the disastrous Jackson Victory Tour?
Yeah.
Like the last tour of the Jacksons as a band.
Yeah, that was really, really bad.
Yes. And all the infighting that went along with it and the weirdness. I suspect that that all began right here with this Pepsi commercial. Because that Victory Tour was the next year.
Yeah.
And in the Pepsi commercial, they don't use a Jackson 5 song.
Mm-mm.
They use a Michael Jackson song.
Yes.
I suspect that Tito and Jermaine and Marlon and everyone else was really upset about that.
That is quite possible.
But I don't know that for a fact. And Jermaine, if you're out there, I really like your music, man. Dynamite's a good song.
All right. So what do we got next?
We have birthdays. Hey,
yeah.
1954, Neil Schon is born on an Air Force base in Oklahoma. The guitarist does some time with Santana before he and a bunch of other people from Santana go on to found Journey. And then later he leaves Journey to play for a band, Bad English, who I've never paid attention to or listened to.
So Neil is, he's no longer with Journey?
He's gone back to him now.
Okay, I was going to say, because I thought I saw him at the concert.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't, that's why you threw me off when you said that he left.
There was
a
decade somewhere between like mid-90s to 2000s when he wasn't playing with Journey, I think. But I'm not a Journey fan. Either way, we got a clip of some early Journey with
Robert Fleischman. Yeah, here it goes. Guy's got a good voice.
Yeah, he's not a bad singer.
But we're not talking about Robert.
No, I still don't care for even all that.
I know
Journey.
You don't care for Journey, but however, I'm kind of excited since they are playing with Def Leppard at Busch Stadium. And while I've seen Journey before, and Arnel Pineda is one of the best frontmen and singers out right now for Journey, I'm looking forward to seeing Def Leppard. Just because. But I mean, I've seen Journey before, and I'm looking forward to seeing them again. But I've never seen Def Leppard perform, and so I'm looking forward to that probably,
you know,
a little more.
I make fun of Def Leppard a lot.
Yeah.
But I do have mad respect for any band that can play three shows on three different continents in the same day.
Mm-hmm.
On the same day. Either way, happy birthday, Neil Schon.
Yes, happy birthday.
I've
to
listened
Neil.
To some like early Journey concerts, and they're still a lot of Santana in that band.
Yes.
Like the first year, a lot of jamming. Anyhow.
So, we have another birthday, though, in 1959, just a few short years after that. Johnny Van Zant is born in Jacksonville, Florida. Of course, he performs and records with the Johnny Van Zant Band and as a solo artist. However, he is best known for succeeding his deceased brother, Ronnie Van Zant, as the frontman for Lynyrd Skynyrd in 1987. So yeah. And he's still playing with them, right? He's still touring with them.
Oh yeah.
So I've not seen Lynyrd Skynyrd like at all either, and I wouldn't mind going to at least one show of them just to see how they are, you know? I got like my bucket list of bands that I want to see, and they're on it.
Lynyrd Skynyrd is not my favorite Johnny Van Zant project, though.
Oh, yeah?
I prefer, like, 38 Specials music. I connect with a lot more. Don't ask me why. Maybe I was soured by, like, probably other people's opinions that I didn't care for really enjoying Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah, that's true.
It seems like every time I've ever had somebody spit tobacco on my car windshield, they were always wearing a Lynyrd Skynyrd t-shirt. I don't...
Yeah, well. All right. Moving on to February 28th. we got ourselves a nice little story in 1966. If you didn't know about it, there was this little place known as the Cavern Club in Liverpool. And a certain unknown band named the Beatles happened to play there a bunch of times. And by a bunch, I mean like 1,000 times. Because they would play like 3 times a day some days and like, you know, just go crazy. But actually in 1966, the Cavern Club shut down. And the very next day, hundreds of Beatles fans showed up and did a sit-in protesting the shutting down of the Cavern Club. So there you go. The Cavern Club is no more, as far as I know. I'm pretty sure the entire building got tore down. But they said it really was like a cavern. Like, you walk down in it, and it's just like, it's all like rounded tops and everything. Because I think it was supposed to be like a bunker.
Okay.
Like an air raid bunker or something. And like, it had like these little offshoots and stuff like that. And that's like where the stages were. It's like, they said it wasn't designed to be a venue at all, but they built it as one because why not? And so that's where the Cavern Club came to be.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Too bad they ran out of money.
Yeah, they ran out of money, which is, I mean, it's not even, I'm not even sure if they ran out of money necessarily. I mean, maybe they were just like, we're just tired of doing this.
I think I read somewhere that the owner declared bankruptcy.
Oh, yeah. So. Well, I mean, he might have tried to do something, but, you know, like maybe tried to start another business, tried to do something else. And it's like, I haven't researched it enough to give you a definitive answer as to why it actually closed. All I know is that it did close on February 28th, 1966. So, yeah. How about that?
All right. Now it's time for a segment I'm going to call Jake's Memories. Because I remember when this happened. I remember what I was doing when this happened.
Go for it.
1998. Garth Brooks hosts Saturday Night Live. In one sketch, he plays a young man named Milo Jenkins. Excuse me. Milo Jenkins.
Milo.
Who is desperate for a hit song. So desperate that he states he would sell his soul for a hit song. Will Ferrell plays the devil, who shows up to purchase his soul, but unfortunately he's having a really bad day at writing songs. So Milo turned down some absolute winners like Fred Slacks, Zorga's Love Bat, and Mr. Robotron on the Highway. And after The Devil Takes Off, Milo gets the inspiration he needed and writes The Devil Can't Write No Love Songs. Oh, the devil. Yeah, the devil can't write no love songs.
I like that. That's pretty clever. Like, I mean, if you're going to utilize a country singer like that, I mean, that's a pretty clever sketch that he could do.
It really was not a terrible episode because he was both the music guest and the host.
Yeah. I like it sometimes when they do that. I think they did that with like Miley Cyrus a couple of times and but I don't recall a lot of the other ones that they've done where it was the guest and the musical guest or the host and the musical guest.
Yeah.
Cuz that's a little rarer to do. But that's it. That's all I got.
That's the end of it. Yeah.
All right, so let's get on to the birthdays, and we have another country artist. Born in 1977, the country singer Jason Aldean is born Jason Aldean Williams in Macon, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you didn't know, Jason Aldean is going on tour this year.
Yeah.
And he will be coming probably to a city near you.
You're an Aldean fan, aren't you?
Nope.
Really?
Nah, not really.
I seriously put this in here because I thought you were.
No, not really. I mean, I'm not a huge country fan. Yeah. I like Keith Urban because he doesn't really write country music. He writes pop music that happens to have country-esque things in it. And that's what Jessica listens to. And Lady Antebellum I listen to, but that's because of Charles Kelly. Charles Kelly is a stupidly talented singer. And I think everybody gets hung up on like, well, it's Lady Antebellum. It's like, but if you check out his solo album, you'll be blown away. So no, I hardly know anything about Jason Aldean. But yeah, it's his birthday this week.
I'll give him props for two things. One,
yes,
Jason Aldean still writes songs about farmers.
That is true.
Where most country stars are basically writing pop songs.
Yes,
you know, they're bragging about the money they have or whatever.
Yeah, that like the Florida Georgia Line and like some of those other ones that like. I was joking around with Jessica, and this is, you can find numerous comedians who have been doing this where they have like fake country songs, and the sad part is that they so closely mirror real country songs sometimes that it's just stupid. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, hey, if it's like, we got to mention trucks, got to mention dirt roads, cold beer, you know, something along those lines. Like,
yeah.
And you got to say the word girl at least once. it's kind of sad how predictable some of these country songs have gotten. That's one of the reasons why I like Keith Urban, though, is because Keith Urban, at least, like, he writes his stuff. You know, he comes up with his own songs. He comes up with his own concepts. Yeah, he works with other people to develop those. But at the same time, he's really good at that. And he's just a really good guitar player, too. So he's very underrated as a guitar player, in my opinion. And I think a lot of people just, well, he's that country singer. Well, no. I mean, that dude can rock a Strat. That's all I know. I've seen him do it. Like, he just flies all over the place. He's really good.
The other thing,
though, happy birthday, Jason Aldean.
Yeah, and the other thing is that he never jumped on the patriotic song bandwagon
that
in the
is
early
true.
2000s.
Yeah, that is true.
He was still just writing songs about tractors and,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, there you go.
I think maybe I'm wrong. I thought Jason Aldean's he's I forgot what the name of his tour is this year, but yeah. I mean, I'm never going to fault somebody for liking something, even if I don't really know much about it or if I don't care for it. If you like Jason Aldean, good on you. That's what you like. That's what you follow. You know, so go and check out his tour if you are a fan of country and you want to go see Jason Aldean.
It's the High Noon Neon Tour.
Yeah, that's right. Because I remember seeing the promos, and I was like, huh, that's kind of an interesting name. It's way better than the other tour that's going on right now, which is What Makes You Country, won by that other dude. And I forgot his name. Luke Bryan or something like that.
One of the Gospels. It's a Gospels.
One of those dudes. But yeah, he's got that song, and the album's called What Makes You Country. And it's like, it's all the same stupid crap. Dirt roads, trucks, girl. You know, cold beer.
Yeah.
Apparently that makes you country. It's like, because apparently nobody else in the frickin' country or the world likes trucks and driving on dirt roads and drinking cold beer.
Yeah. I mean, according to some people, all it takes is buying jeans at the mall on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow.
Let's go ahead and move on.
We should move on. Because on March 1st,
yeah.
in 1968, Johnny Cash finally... to everyone's delight, married June Carter.
Love of his life. It was that simple. He loved her from the moment he heard her. And it was all over after that.
And who didn't? That's my question.
Yeah, June, like, you know, she always said that, you know, if she wasn't going to be the looker and she wasn't going to sound good, she should at least be funny. I was like, but Johnny, like, didn't care. Like, Johnny, he's like, what are you talking about? So you can totally sing. You're great. Your voice is perfect. It's like, you know, but she, you know, obviously didn't think exceptionally highly of herself, which is probably one of the reasons why she was so good for Johnny after the fact, because she could really keep him grounded. So, oh, as much as you could ground Johnny Cash.
Fair enough.
But yeah, that was a great moment for him and, you know, for the rest of the world, as far as I'm concerned, because then it just proved that, yeah, he had a bunch of missteps and a couple of bad things that he did, but that was one good thing that he did in his life. So,
and good for fans of country music, because after that, the Carter family never sang without him again.
True.
More or less. And some of those songs, they get old really fast. Oh, my God.
Yes.
I mean, I like country music, but Mama Maybelle is impossible to listen to. Anyway.
All right. So that was the only story we got for March 1st. So now on to the birthdays. And here is an exciting one, because this is something that I know everybody knows. And everybody, if you didn't even know it, you know this song. And this, the person who wrote it is his birthday. And it goes a little something like this. Thank you. there you go. That is Glenn Miller, the Glenn Miller Orchestra. The song is In the Mood, and I'm sure you've heard it at least a few thousand times in your life, as well you should. It is one of the most popular songs that was ever written in that age, and everyone danced to it all the time. So he was born in Clarinda, Iowa, and he did a bunch of stuff, wrote all of these great songs, and then unfortunately, during the World War II, his plane ended up being shot down.
Or disappeared. Who knows?
Or something along those lines, but Glenn Miller was no more after that. But he wrote a ton of songs before that and was insanely popular and really, like, established this American style of big band that, had been around for a bit, but he established it throughout the rest of the world, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. In the 40s, by that time, early 1940s, late 1930s, everyone actually had a list of what was being played on the radio, their own Hot 100 list. And when I was looking through at this time, right, in 1942, he had the number one hit in the U.S., in the U.K., and in like three different countries in Europe.
Yeah.
Simultaneously. In 1942.
Yeah.
Like, now, we're not talking like Gangnam Style on the internet that everyone's watching. No.
Yeah.
1942.
Yeah. Which means that people were not only buying records, but they were buying the sheet music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
to go along with it. And this was in 42, which means that it was like right in the middle of the war, especially for America.
Yeah.
And there he is.
Well, okay, now that I think about it, the countries that were listed was like the US, UK, Spain, Italy, and
we were at war with Italy.
Yeah. And they were still buying Glenn Miller albums, and he was enlisting in the army.
It's like we're gonna fight these Americans, but gosh darn it, if their music isn't good. He was probably banned in Germany.
Well, you know what? You know what, though, Brian? Maybe they had to buy something, and Glenn Miller was the only thing that was imported. Who knows?
All right. But what do we got up next, Jake?
Oh, a mere 40 years later, 1944, Roger Daltrey of The Who is born, Roger Harry Dalty, in London, England.
If I could do the yeah scream from, the intro to that one song.
Yeah!
I would have totally done it there, but I can't do that. Yeah. I can't sing like Roger Daltrey.
Mm-hmm. But you could put your glasses on.
That is
really
true.
Cool, like.
Oh, you mean like the intro to the, well, what's the name of that show?
No, that's not
NCIS. It's CSI.
CSI.
It's like CSI Miami or whatever, or Las Vegas or.
One of them.
Newark.
Newark.
Portland.
CSI Baton Rouge.
Ottumwa, Iowa. I don't know.
Wabash, Illinois.
CSI
Coeur d'Alene. Wabash. it's really bad when it gets down to CSI Germantown.
CSI Peoria.
Anyhow, Roger Daltrey, The Who. All I can say is that there was
We've reviewed Who's Next on the show. Go back and check out our review because it was amazing. It was so great just going through that album again and like re-exploring those songs. Because if you haven't listened to Who's Next, then you have missed out on one of the best albums ever made. Best rock albums ever made. It's like so good. But yeah, Roger, amazing voice. Like really like just a very distinct style to him. And you could listen to him sing one line and you're like, that's Roger Daltrey. Like, he just has such a unique sound that nobody else can really match him. So there you go.
Happy birthday, Roger Daltrey.
Happy birthday, Roger Daltrey. Okay. So just 6 short years later, in 1950, music journalist Dave Marsh is born in Detroit, Michigan. Marsh has been characterized as a grumpy rock and roll journalist due to his acerbic comments on popular musicians whom he dislikes. In 1976, he wrote that Led Zeppelin had an insurmountable flaw in drummer John Bonham, whom he saw as something like clinically incompetent and responsible for marring every Zeppelin album. That's just hilarious.
Yeah, John Bonham, who is everyone regards as
one of, if not the best, rock drummer of all time.
I mean, I think something like 7 out of 10 drummers, if you ask them who their favorite drummer is, they will say
John Bonham. Yeah.
Two will say
Neil Peart.
And the last guy is a jazz guy who might say,
like, Buddy Rich or something.
Buddy Rich.
Yeah. Which is funny because they will all talk about Buddy Rich. Like, Neil Peart is like a John Bonham who talk about Buddy Rich. Like, so that cracks me up. Then you get the one weird guy who's just like Ginger Baker.
Ginger Baker and his, what was his band?
The American Super Awesome, I don't freaking know. it was something weird like that. It was the American something or other. I don't know. But yes, of course, this guy, while being a grumpy old rock and roll journalist, obviously made a name for himself as...
Oh, Ginger Baker's Air Force.
Oh, okay.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Oh, then what am I thinking? Oh, I'm thinking of Ringo. Ringo's band.
Yeah.
Like the All-American All-Stars or something like that. I don't remember that one. But yeah, there you go. Happy birthday, Dave Marsh. Congratulations. But we got
You're
one
an
more
asshole.
Birthday.
Congratulations. You're an asshole. 1994! Is that the youngest birthday we've had yet?
Probably.
It probably is.
Yeah, I don't think we've done sooner than that.
Because a fella you might have heard of him named Justin Bieber was born in London,
Ontario. Yes.
Canada.
Still cracks me up. People were trying to book flights to London, and they're like, man, it's so cheap to fly to London. It's like, it's because it was London, Ontario.
Yeah, boy, it's so cheap to fly to London, Ohio.
Surprisingly, I've actually wanted to go to London, Ontario, because they have a bunch of big tours go through there, and it's a fairly large city. So, but that's where he was born, and happy birthday to Justin Bieber. Weirdly enough, I was actually watching a Justin Bieber video this week. I don't normally click on his stuff or his music videos, but it wasn't a music video. It was him live doing the song I Could Sing of Your Love Forever.
Ooh.
The 90s worship song. That wasn't United.
Hillsong?
No, that was even before. I don't even think that was Hillsong. So that was like before Hillsong even made it big. It was the song that was played by every single like charismatic non-denominational church, which then filtered into even denominational churches and every youth group across the world. It has been translated into like 80 different languages, and he did it at one of his concerts on an acoustic guitar while sitting on a couch, and I was like, huh, interesting. He did okay. It wasn't a great version of it, but he did okay. So
That's from Delirious.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's right, it is from Delirious. I forgot about that. Yes. So it was the song that was played everywhere because that's what.
It's always peeved me that
do.
They put the question mark at the end of their name because it's so dumb.
Yeah. March 2nd, Jake, what do you got for us?
1984, live, direct from hell, Spinal Tap!
Sweeter the potion, that's what I said.
is, of course, the great Spinal Tap. If you haven't seen Spinal Tap, shame on you.
I still think it's the greatest documentary about just touring as an act ever made.
Yeah. It's just one of the most hilarious movies I think I've ever seen in my life. And I'm still a huge fan of any of the dudes that are in that movie, with their later career. And then, of course, them coming back in all of the Christopher Guest mockumentaries, which are all brilliant in and of themselves. So, Spinal Tap, 1984.
The Tap, yes.
Live, direct from hell. You were reading off some of the reviews before the show, and I was cracking up the whole time. But let's go ahead and jump up a few decades too,
really quickly. Though,
go ahead.
Have you ever looked up any of the bands involved with some of the supporting cast? Okay, so the guy who plays their keyboard player,
yes,
the character's name is Viv Savage. Which is a great name. But his name is David Kaff, and he was kind of like the Keith Emerson of England.
Interesting.
He was in a band called Rare Bird, which was this basically like ELO, Emerson, Lake and Palmer of the UK. Really cool stuff. You should look it up sometime.
Okay.
Anyway, just wanted to mention that. Rare Bird. I'm a fan.
Ha! Interesting. Okay, so up a few decades to 2014. Arby's buys the hat that Pharrell Williams wore to the Grammys on eBay for $44,100. The fast food chain donates the hat, which resembles their logo, to the museum in Washington, D.C. Money from that auction goes to from one hand to another charity. So that was kind of a cool little deal that they did. You know, it's like, hey, let's buy this because it kind of looks like our logo, and then donate the money and give the hat to a museum. Why not?
Strangest news story of the week.
Definitely, because that's something that I didn't even know about.
Yeah.
And that was just a few short years ago. So, yeah, I didn't know anything about Arby's buying it or any of that stuff. But, yeah. Well, that's it we got for stories. We are down to our last two birthdays. And, of course, we are starting with 1942 on March 2nd. Lou Reed is born Lewis Allen Reed in Brooklyn, New York. Now, once again, if you don't know who Lou Reed is, you're missing out. The man is one of the founders of basically the punk scene. He just, like, it's so hard to explain this. You just have to go listen to it, because Lou Reed is just one of these dudes who became so influential. He was a poet. He was an artist. He was just like a renaissance man in the New York music scene. And you just need to go check him out. It's that simple. But yes, happy birthday, Lou Reed. And going on for our final birthday of the week, what do we got, Jake?
1956. John Cowsill of the Cowsills is born in Newport, Rhode Island.
Okay. Now, we've talked about the Cowsills before.
Yes, we have.
We've brought this up. So you're going to have to give a refresher to the people.
Okay, so the Cowsills were the original family band on television. They were kind of the inspiration for both the Partridge Family.
Yes, that's right. I remember that now.
Yes. They were on TV like a decade before the Partridge Family and had a couple of hits. One of which is the strangely titled The Rain, The Park, and Other Things, which I know you've heard, Brian. You know, the I Love the Flower Girl.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember that song.
That song.
Yeah.
That was not like a hippie group. That was a made-for-TV family.
Interesting. I like that, though.
Anyhow.
Either way, happy birthday, Lou Reed and John Cousill. And that closes out our week this week. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. I thought it was a fantastic short little program that we did. And by short, I mean it was like an hour or something. Actually, we just hit an hour like 20 seconds ago.
Boom!
That's how we do it. Either way, folks, thanks for listening to our program. If you want to help us out, remember, go to the website and click on that Amazon banner, or just go to followthesoundpodcast.com. /Amazon, go to Amazon, do all of your normal shopping. It won't cost you anything extra. We get a little bit of money back. You can go on there and find such great things as the Cowstills, probably an album, or any one of the other people. Check out Lou Reed and Johnny Cash, any of the people that we mentioned today. Please go check that out and buy their albums. Actually, if you go there and you click through our link and you sign up for Amazon Prime, then we get even more money back. But if you sign up for Amazon Prime, you get access to Amazon Music, and you get access to thousands upon thousands of albums that you can download onto your phone. So go check that out. It is one of the greatest music resources of our age. And once you sign up for Prime, it won't cost you anything extra. But we get a little bit of money for you signing up for Prime if you go through our website. So please do so. Once again, thanks to lineupmedia.fm for allowing us to do the program. Thanks, guys. You rock. I have been your host, Brian Kroc. This has been Follow the Sound. And along with me has been, of course, my great co-host, Jacob Crum.
This pretentious, ponderous collection of religious rock songs is enough to prompt the question, what day did the Lord create Spinal Tap? And couldn't he have rested on that day, too?
Remember, if you hear it, follow the sound.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.